This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero, and you're listening to the Tour Coach Podcast. These are a collection of conversations, roundtable discussions, interviews with friends, people I meet, people I teach, folks that come to see us, people that I teach with, respect and admire, all from around the world of golf. If you're a golf nut, a golf junkie, you love golf instruction, or maybe you just want a little entertainment, you're in the right place. We've got over 200 conversations out there available for you now on the Tour Coach, and I'm excited as we head into 2024. Our goal is to bring you more content each and every week and help all of you enjoy and play the game of golf better. Special thanks to my sponsors that have all been with me for such a long time. Thanks to McConnell Automotive, Mitch McConnell and the folks at McConnell Automotive, and the folks at Bushnell Golf. Couldn't do any of it, especially pro work, without them. Vineyard Vines, keeping us looking good and always taking care of us at all the retreats. And, of course, Srixon and Cleveland Golf and the folks there, whether it's Chip Holcomb, Eddie Dry, Mason Prang, Noel Zavada, Roddy McDonald, all of them, everybody that has been part of our journey with Srixon Cleveland Golf for over 23 years, I believe it is now. So, and also want to welcome one of the new sponsors to the Dew Sweepers and the Tour Coach Podcast, and that would be Visor Skincare and our folks, the Franklins, who are been Dew Sweepers and fans of us for a long time, and it is by far the best skincare and sunscreen out there, so make sure you check them out as well. And hope you enjoy this season of the Tour Coach and what we've got going on. We're looking forward to bringing you some great stuff, and enjoy this conversation here on the Tour Coach.
All right, so joining me here on the Tour Coach, it's been a while. I was trying to think of the last time that I had this guest on. Man, on the old radio days, I used to have him on a ton. I think the last time might have been the U.S. Open stretch where we had several come out from that house there near LACC. But my good friend, one of the great teachers in the game, Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher, Brady Riggs. What is up? This is a West Coast edition of the Tour Coach.
How much better could it get, Tony? You on the West Coast, forget about it.
I'd like to spend some more time out there with you. I really would.
Hey, it was great when you came out to LACC. You got a good look at LA and what it's all about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a super, super fun thing to do. Like, I had a great time, obviously, you know, with Ben out there. He's fired me since, but that's par for the course. You know, but like I'd been to LACC once with Smiley. Like, I stopped to meet him on the way to Japan. I didn't really get a look at the place. And as you know, from when we've been friends for a long time, I haven't spent that much time in LA. You know, so it was cool. I really enjoyed it. And before we get into the golf, I'm going to give my observation of what was different about LA during a major championship. So most places, if you're at a major and you go into a bar or a grill or something that I might frequent, everything's about the golf, right? You know, if you go into Shinnecock and you're down the road at a place or whatever. I mean, I went into this really nice sports bar and started talking to some folks. I'm sitting there and they asked me, they didn't even have a clue that the tournament was going on.
Yeah.
There's like, you know, the Lakers were playing and da-da-da-da-da. Like, there was so much going on, but I thought that was cool. I thought it was first of all, they did an amazing job, and Wyndham played amazing. But it was really cool having, and I'm sure the USGA liked it and all that, but it was very cool having a major out there on the West Coast.
Yeah, it was great, too. A long time since there's been one out there. And well deserved. I mean, LA Country Club, the first round got obliterated by no real benign conditions, but it's a great layout, and you know, I'm looking forward to it coming back. And you know, Riviera is still my favorite course probably in the world. So there's some great golf in LA. There's a lot of
Don't you think they ought to have a major at Riviera again?
They should, man. I mean, that golf course, they don't even play it nearly as hard as they can play
right
when they play at the Genesis there. So it's a terrific layout. It's still my favorite course.
So let's talk, obviously, this week in the news. This is going to come out a little bit late past that, a week or so past that. But I know you're very familiar with it. You put a really cool piece out on social media, and follow him, by the way, all you do sweepers. And I told you this off the air, Brady, but super pumped. We're putting out more content, and we're up to like 20,000 people listening a week, which blows my mind that 20,000 people want to hear any of our shit. But like, you know, the stuff you put out, some great stuff about Anthony Kim. Let's kind of talk a little bit about what you saw, what you think the future. Obviously, you're very familiar. Give a little bit of the background, and let's talk about AK a little bit. Regardless of where you stand on the Tour of the Live deal, AK coming back is a big story, especially, like, you know, if you're I remember I was at the Ryder Cup at Louisville. I went with my old mentor, Hank. It was kind of one of the last things him and I did together. It was my treat to him. Was a really cool deal, and he was such a big part. You know, I remember him and Boo Weekly were the two people I remember from that week. You couldn't find two more opposite people, right?
Exactly.
Than AK and Boo, but they were the stars of the week, other than Azinger and the obviously. But talk a little bit about AK.
First met Anthony. He was 7 years old at a driving range in LA, a very famous range back in the day called Studio City. It's closing actually in a couple of weeks, which is tragic. A ton of great tour players come from there, but Anthony was special from a very young age. You know, everybody knew about him by the time he was 10, 11, 12, kind of like Tiger, you know, in that way. And Anthony had mad game and even madder swagger, you know, like nobody talked more trash. Nobody carried themselves quite the way AK did. I mean, you remember when he came out on tour and he had the flashy AK belt buckle and, you know, he was no less flashy in college. I can assure you many a nights AK wouldn't end up back at his house because he'd go from the tournament to wherever it is he was taking in a little entertainment. And then he'd end up back at the golf course the next morning dressed in the clothes he was wearing the day before. That was Anthony, you know. He was kind of a larger-than-life player, and he was like that all through amateur golf and college golf. And he was just so talented, Tony. I can't even begin to tell you, you know, the shots he could hit at a young age. And just one of those guys you couldn't rattle. Like, the more competitive it got, the better it was
for him.
You know, and I remember one of my great favorite AK stories was, it was the summer between his senior year in high school and when he was going to Oklahoma, and he was on the range hitting balls. I said, AK, when are you going to Oklahoma? And he said, the franchise will be arriving in Norman in late August. So that's just how he was, you know. They called himself the franchise. When he first came back after, like, for the holiday during his freshman year, he was wearing this velour jumpsuit with this huge gold chain. It's just fantastic. And he was always like that, you know, just so much fun and so much just – The competition part of it is what he loved. He could care less whether it was Quad Cities or the U.S. Open. It didn't matter to him. He just loved to compete. And if you could get him up for something like the Ryder Cup, he could be the best player on the golf course, no question about it.
What did you think of what you saw at Jeddah? Obviously, this may come out and he may have played again the next week. We won't know. But what did you think about what you saw? Obviously, he saw the swings, a lot of swings of him on Instagram. And kudos, no matter where you stand on the Live PGA Tour deal, the fact that you could actually go online and watch every player swing, every player's is a good thing, right? I mean, so.
Yeah, no, I mean, that part's great. And, you know, he looks like himself. Like, the swing looks like AK.
That's what I thought.
All the normal stuff, you know, like the same triggers going back, the little lateral motion to start, changing directions really quickly, you know, kind of halfway back, like. You know, Tommy Armour III did that, you know, a lot. Just up-tempo, quick transitions, super aggressive through the ball. That just looks the same. Even a follow-through to me looked exactly the same. You know, the confidence is one of those things that I don't care who you are. You take enough time off. That's the thing that goes, no matter right. how good you are technically. And, you know, he shanked a ball and did all that stuff and shot a couple 76s, and then he shot 74 the last round. But I think overall, I mean, heck, I don't know how you would play after 12 years off playing competitive golf. I would have been pretty happy with a couple 76s and a 74.
I thought, and, you know, obviously the Twitter people are brutal. But I thought, one, he actually surpassed what I thought he might shoot a little bit. I thought the first round could get a little goofy. But you know, he hit a bunch of good shots. I mean, and look, regardless of what you think about the whole deal, like, I thought his comments were really open and honest about, like, hey, like, there was a lot of upside. I hit it better than I scored. And the only people that are going to bitch and say stuff about that are people that don't know anything about golf.
You're right.
Right? You
couldn't be more right. Totally. I totally agree.
Because how many times have, I mean, you and I've talked multiple times about a player who's not played and you're like, oh, well, he hit it pretty good. He just didn't get very much out of it because he hadn't played. The only people that are making fun of him for shooting 76 when he says he got hit it okay are people that don't know anything about golf.
Yeah. And we both know there's rounds. Not all 76s are the same, right?
Correct.
You can shoot 76. Hit it.
My 76 and AK 76 are different.
Indeed. You know, and you can shoot the same score 2 days in a row and have two completely different days. But he had stretches of good golf in every round that he played. But I think what you said about him in his comments was really interesting, because that's a different guy, you know, compared to the guy that we knew, you know. And I knew him very, very well. I've probably watched Anthony hit at least 100,000 golf balls on the range. You know, that's how much time I spent with him. And I absolutely do not take credit for him as a player. I mean, he, you know, Adam Shriver's his coach, and they have just done great work.
Right.
Love
absolutely.
Great, great coach. But I you know, clearly I spent a lot of time with Anthony, and I would just say, like, the swing looks really, really good, but his maturity level just seems really different to me. You know, I mean, he says he's got a story to tell about, you know, what's been going on with him. And I think we're all anxious to hear that, because nobody really knows except for maybe one or two people
what's
been going on with his life. But, you know, he's a dad now, and he's got a daughter, and his wife's there, and she's into golf. And I think from what I've read, that motivated him to maybe come back, and maybe he's got a perspective now that's really different and healthier for him. Maybe he'll just kind of grow into that space and enjoy his golf, because I can just tell you, it was not something he enjoyed. You know, he didn't love golf. He was a means to an end for him for most of his life, until he quit playing. And I don't think he has to come back to play. I think he wants to come back to play, and that might really change things for him. I'm certainly rooting for him to be successful wherever he's playing, you know, because he's a great story, and he's an LA kid, and, you know, obviously I wish him nothing but success.
Well, I think it's, you know, everybody that listens to these things, our stuff included, you know, they think they know more than everybody else, or a lot of people do. And, you know, I think they assume that everybody just loves golf and wants, you know, there's nothing that could be better or greater than this, that, or the other. But don't realize that there's a bunch of people. I've taught a couple that don't love golf. They just happen to be really good at it.
Really well said. Yeah.
Right. And it'd be no different than an accountant who's brilliant with numbers and great doing all that. But I mean, it just isn't what he loves to do. He just does it because he makes a great living doing it. And I think people don't understand that. And I think what you said, you know, but, you know, I also think that, like, if he's come back and it's because he really wants to do it this time, I think it's going to be a great story. Right. And yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he does.
I think whatever he gets out of it. Right. I mean, it's going to be a good thing for him to have come back. I mean, he was always that, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi figure. You know, golf. He was off into the wilderness, and nobody knew where he was, and there was always these rumors about him. And I think the whole time, Anthony just didn't want to come back and didn't care. You know, he didn't want to be around golf. I mean, golf, without talking too much about it, was always tough. You know, the people around him, I think, were difficult. I think it was just really difficult for him. Mm-hmm. And he grew to hate playing. Didn't want to practice, didn't love it. You know, he loved the competition part, but just didn't love the game. And, you know, maybe this has given him a chance to see it again from a different perspective. And, you know, I think he's, dude, he's still in the low 170s ball speed wise. It's not like he's lost that much. I think yeah. he'll get stronger too as he goes. So he's not going to lack for distance. I mean, it was a strength of his previously, and maybe, you know, most of the top 25 players in the world have passed him by, but he'll hit it long enough.
Yeah. You he's know, not going to be.
When he gets going.
Yeah. Correct.
When he gets going, I'll tell you one more quick case story. So we were playing a two-man match, and he was on the last hole, and a really friend of mine from Sherwood, great guy, massive smack talker himself, and not a very good golfer. They were on the last green, and there were all these bets going. I have no idea where things stood, but anyway, Anthony's got about a 20-footer, and my buddy goes over, and he's trying to rattle him. You know, and they were friends, so there was always a bunch of shit talking. And anyway, he stands right next to him, and he's standing like 2 feet away from him. And AK standing over the putt, and AK looks up at him without changing his stance, just looks up at him and goes, "This is going to hurt a little." Put his head back down and knocked it in.
How great is that?
That's the guy, you know. That's the guy who in a Ryder Cup can change things.
Right.
You know, I mean, that type of spirit, that type of fight. I mean, Sergio wanted to have absolutely nothing to do with it.
But to go down this road, although we could, but like that's the stuff we need on a Ryder Cup. We don't need a boys club. We don't need this guy is, you know, he's buddies with this or, you know, he just played good for the year. Like, I mean, we need guys that people are scared of. And that when you put the tee in the ground, it means something different to them.
Lanny Watkins, Corey Pavin, mm-hmm. the Payne Stewart, those guys were ballers, man. Mm-hmm. Tom Lehman, you know, those guys all wanted to win.
And right.
I think you're spot on. We could do.
Who would you say of that, the new young guys of the new crop? Who makes you think like, man, like this guy is going to be a Ryder Cupper for a long time. And not even if he's not playing good, but like you can put him in.
You know, that's a really good question because I think JT and Spieth are those guys,
right?
You know, they're definitely gamers. You know, Koepka, that's not a guy who likes to lose very much,
mm-hmm.
you know, but this younger generation coming up of these guys that are really, really good. Like I like Sahith a lot. I think he's got a lot of game, you know, I really like his game. I think there's some guys that are in that group. What do you think, Tony? Because I know you're around a lot of the younger guys. Who do you think's in that group that can really?
I like what you said about Thegala. I like Sahith. I think that you know his game. I think is great. You know, you can't disagree with JT and Jordan. I mean, and I think together, it's weird how Ryder Cups make people partners, isn't it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's strange.
Like yeah. you know, like Strick and Ty. You know, just there's just stuff that. You know, I personally think where we need to change, and this is a way different, like we got to change the captaincy. Like we don't need the same five people rotating through there, you know,
I don't disagree.
It's no different than picking the Golf Magazine Top 100, but that's another subject. I'm getting kicked off for this, but anyways, so, but I mean,
what
I think
about like what about the best college coach in the country?
Yeah.
I've always felt like, you know, I know it sounds crazy, but I mean, Krzyzewski made a pretty good U.S. Olympic team coach, you know, mm-hmm. he had a coach. And I think somewhere in there,
what if you put know, a coach had, as the coach?
That's what I'm saying. Maybe Mike Small,
right?
You know, there's a guy who commands respect. He's mm-hmm. been doing it a long time. He's a really,
he can
really
play.
Good player and he can flat play, you know, and then he's out there as a coach who all he does every year is coach teams. Mm-hmm. That might be a good pick. You know, somebody just off the beat, because I think you're right. We get the same type of person in there all the time. And a lot of those guys now that are turning captain weren't great Ryder Cuppers.
No. And
they were in a generation that lost every single time on the road. So I think you wouldn't be bad to shake that up.
I think you know, obviously Tiger's the one, like, you got to give him, and I think he'll be great, because I don't think he'll care if he pisses anybody off. I think he's going to do it to win, and he's going to make the decisions. But, you know, I think that some of the things you've got are like, I mean, is whoever is in charge of it going to give the captain the ability to really pick who they want, you know, and who's going to be the best team. And so, but like, I think obviously you got Tiger, and what I think's a shame about the golf, where we are as a golf world too. And I've been fortunate to just go into a couple live events to spend whatever 9 or 18 or 27 holes with Phil. Like, I think he's the same way. He would do whatever it took to win. He would be a great captain. I mean, I hope at some point people heal and he gets the opportunity, another California guy. But you know, I mean, I think that we got to quit trying to appease people and pick people who actually want to do the job to win.
I think you're right. But I think, you know, we need it right back to where we started with this Ryder Cup, is back to guys like AK.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking for those types of players that are fiery, you know, that are out there. They don't care about the money in that point. They're just out there to win, and they're not trying to make friends with everybody. And I even like what AK said at the beginning of the week, and he obviously said it a bit tongue-in-cheek, you know, when he said, I'm out here to kick everybody's butt or whatever he said, which I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's who that guy is, you know, and he clearly was not saying, you know, anything negative.
Right, him. Right.
He wanted to come out with the right mentality, and I think that's a mentality that we're not seeing enough, and we need to see more of. And hopefully this next group of younger players that are coming onto the tour and coming straight from college, that's what we want to find those next guys.
Yeah, they got to find the next one. I do like the guy. I like what you said there. You know, obviously Sam Burns is a great player. I mean, there's a bunch of good young. It'll be interesting to see. Like, we've had some kind of, you know, unsung heroes, young guys kind of bust out over the last few months, you know, with it being a little bit of a stretch. It'll be interesting to see. I think you'll have a couple guys that come out that people didn't know about. I think Cameron Young should have got on the last one. I mean, mm-hmm. like, he scares me. If I was playing as a player, he would scare me more than some of the guys they picked.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right, like, crazy long, hit some shots that, like, there's going to be guys on the other team, they just can't hit it. I don't care what they say. They can't hit it. I mean, does he have weaknesses? Yeah. But, like, you know, I mean, when Tiger came out, he had weaknesses. He wasn't great at certain things, but he still scared the shit out of people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's tough to deal with a guy who can do things that you can't do.
Right.
In a match play setting, right? Because he can make some big mistakes, but it's not going to hurt him but a hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that makes it tough to play against somebody one-on-one. Because no matter how steady you are, it's tough when you're 30 or 40 behind somebody all day. That just makes
no question. Tough. All right, let's shift gears. Instruction fads. Anything going on out there you want to comment on? I always – that's my favorite question for you every time.
Okay, so there's two things that drive me – they're driving me a little crazy. One of them is, somewhere along the way, people became convinced that you could rotate your body to square a face. And I see it all over the place on certain feeds on Instagram, where they're always teaching everybody the same thing about turning your chest to the target and your right shoulder should be pointing at the ball at impact and all that. And it doesn't, you can't find the tour player that does it. Doesn't exist. The greatest players who ever lived don't do that. You know, Tiger's shoulders are even more impressive now. They're like more closed than they've ever been at impact. Mm-hmm. And it gives him a chance to sling the club through a little bit. And he needs to do it more now than ever, because he's more built like the people listening to this
than
show
he used
right
to
now.
Be, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. He can't, his body's just not able to do the things that it could do when he was younger. And I think that, you know, people need to get over the notion that if they turn their chest, the face is going to square up, because it's the opposite. And it also makes the club a lot slower. I mean, look at guys like Freddie Couples, whose left shoulder kind of doesn't move through impact, you know, and how the club flies by him, and BJ. And man, there's so many great players that have been playing great for decades and decades and decades that do it that way. But on social media, you see that isn't what they're teaching. They're teaching people to turn their chest through impact to somehow drag the club behind them and square the face. And doesn't work.
Well, you see a lot of people.
Tony, what do you see?
Well, you see a lot of people teaching that too. Okay, so my pet peeve is people teaching a bunch of crazy, you know, like obviously I teach a lot of rotation and pivot. I'm by far up there on that ladder. But I see a lot of people teaching pivot and different things with guys with shitty club faces and grips.
Yeah.
It's like I went on Instagram the other day and I see it just popped up. And this guy's like, you know, this, and this, and he's doing his stock this. And I'm like, I mean, this grip's fucked up. Right? Like,
yeah.
What? I mean, when did we start giving golf lessons where we skipped that?
You didn't.
Well, I mean, I'm not by far perfect. I mess up plenty of stuff. But, like, you know what I'm saying? I mean, is that crazy? But, like, I turn on Instagram and I'll see this, you know, oh, pressure shift. And I'm not saying I don't teach and put a bunch of that stuff out. I'm just saying, like, but, like, I'll see somebody talking about pressure shift and they're doing this, they're doing that. And the guy's club face is screwed up like chocolate cheese. That's Southern, Brady.
I didn't. That's the first time I've ever heard chocolate cheese, Tony. Never heard that before. You know, that's what makes it tough when you teach everybody the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a guy today. His name is Mark Brown. He's a great guy. He's a member at LA and at Riv. He's 75, and he carries his bag nine holes a few times a week. And he's like, I bet you don't know many 75-year-olds that are carrying their clubs. I'm like, no, I mean, I wouldn't do it. And I'm 20 years younger than Mark is. He goes, yeah, but I only have 8 clubs in my bag now. I think I'm going to go down to 6. It's just getting too heavy. But anyway, Mark's not, you know, he's not dynamic athletically mm-hmm. anymore and hits a 7-iron about 130 yards. And the club face is absolutely wide open coming down. And he hits a draw. You know, and it's wide open because he can't move his body really well. So he's got to use his hands a lot. Mm-hmm. So if I made the face look good coming down and he used his hands a lot, he that thing's going left to left. Mm-hmm. You know, so it works really, really well for him. And then, you know, I had a guy 2 days ago who was in the exact opposite space. He was younger. He was super flexible, very strong, and a big guy. Mm-hmm. And he wants to play a fade. Well, that face is pretty closed at the top. And his body is rotating a lot more through impact.
He can hit a fade. And
he can hit a fade doing that. But if you tried to teach either one of those guys, even a neutral grip with a neutral club face, they would not hit it as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that gets lost on a lot of people that are busy teaching technically sophisticated things. They're missing out on the pieces that matter the most. Like you said, where's the face? What's the path doing? How do those two things, you know, interact so that the guy can hit a ball where he can find it?
Well, I was up at Montgomery not long, in the last 6 months, and gave a guy a lesson. And there's a guy down the road that teaches everybody that I've seen. And you know, look, we've been around the block long enough. Like, you could tell a lot of times in your area who people take lessons from. Am I wrong on that?
100%.
Right. And
absolutely.
And look, and being fair, if one of my students was in LA and they said they moved from Alabama or South Florida and they came out and they took a lesson from you, you'd probably be able to tell if I taught them. I mean, being fair, right? Some, you know, if they had some good jokes or something.
Well, I know if the things look pretty good, I would know,
but,
you know,
yeah.
But you're right. I mean, it's not, but you wouldn't be, I couldn't tell from just watching their swing. They don't look, Tony Ruggiero students don't look a certain way.
Well, I mean, so I see this guy and anyways, the person I'm talking about, everybody tries to get bowed and shut, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this guy has zero ability to turn. I mean, I'm a better athlete. I'm better shape right now. And, you know, he's shanking them off the range at Montgomery into this parking lot, you know? And I was like, I mean, what are you doing? So while he's got me bowed, I'm trying to hit push draws.
Oh, mercy.
You know?
That's not ending well.
And I mean, you know, it's like, you know, but there's a lot of that out there, you know, and I always go back to, you know, what you said. I mean, just the stuff you were just talking about. But I remember one of the things on that, on the golf coach development, we had Butch on, and he talked about, like, you're teaching the person, not golf. I think we get away from that a lot. You know, I think everybody gets these ideas of this is what everybody can do and or what's going to, you know, I'm going to sell a bunch of seminars or I'm going to do this or whatever. And, you know, they make everybody try to do some of the same. And I'm probably guilty of it, too, to be completely transparent. I'm sure I get caught in my ruts a little bit, too. But I think it's an epidemic.
I think you're right. And I think if you see a post on Instagram, somebody teaching, they say something along the lines, this is how you have to do it. Mm-hmm. This is what all the great players do. This makes it go, you know, this is how you get all your speed. That's just disingenuous, you know, like it's just not true.
Right.
If you said instead, hey, look, this works really well with players that are having trouble with this problem. You know, I found a lot of success helping people do that. That's great. That makes a lot of sense. You can say that and say, I try and get most of my amateurs to do this because they hit it better when they do that. That's fantastic. Like turning your hips immediately on the backswing, right?
Yeah.
Immediate hip turn. That absolutely helps a large swath of amateurs not come over the top. They can get some depth out of their turn. The club can come from behind them a little bit more. They can get the club to work from the inside better. It's all 100% true, but when you say that this is what all the best players do, then you're wrong because you didn't see Tiger on video, apparently, in his younger years. Mm-hmm. You didn't see Rory where he starts his backswing. Sam Snead didn't do that. Hogan didn't do that. You know, AK sure didn't do that. There's a lot of great players that are moving laterally in the first, you know, several inches of the backswing away from the target.
Right.
And you can't tell me that, you know, that isn't more athletic. You can't tell me that doesn't make the ball go further. And you certainly can't tell me that it's not more consistent.
No, I would tell you
the best guys that ever lived.
I would tell you a lot of the guys that could hit it the furthest that I've ever put on a swing catalyst. You know way more about this than me. I mean, but like they're the guys that can hit it further. Now, there's some that I get, and this is we're going down the where Tony's going to learn from Brady segment. But like,
oh, I don't know about that.
No. But like, so when I get a young person that can do that, does that, but they hammer it, then my little brain starts to think like, if I center them up more, it gets a little bit straighter. But like, where's the happy medium where they could still hammer it? Does that sound totally bizarre? What I just said?
No, I mean I think what you just said is true. Look at Kyle Berkshire, mm-hmm. right? I mean, he's pulling the club head out of the ground like it's stuck in, you know, mud.
Yeah.
He's moving laterally. He's standing up. I mean, everything that you want to know about speed, we should study Kyle Berkshire's swing. Mm-hmm. Because that guy, he's a freak. And a lot of the things that he does, I try to get my juniors to do.
Right.
Because they'll hit it further. But like you said, it doesn't mean they're going to hit it at the target when they do that, if they're mm-hmm. going crazy with it.
Right.
I want to see some of that out of most of my kids. I really want to see some of it. If I have, like, you know Maddie, my daughter,
she
was playing, she had a ton of lateral early. She was 5 feet tall and 115 pounds. You know, I had to do everything I could to get her to hit it further. And she could hit a 7 iron 155. You know, and that's just from her really maxing out using the ground and trying to change direction dynamically. But it wouldn't be something I would do to somebody who's already coming and is really hitting it really good and, you know, is more centered on their pivot. And so I think what you said is true. Like, you know it creates more speed, but it can also be dangerous, you know, so you got to find the right space.
Yeah, and I think, like, that's what
I'm teaching.
And, you know, we talk so much away from this, but, like, that's the art of teaching, and that's why you can't just read a book or whatever, and it's A, B, C. If it's A, then you got to go do D or whatever, like, it's, you know, and I know Mark Blackburn does a great job of putting out, like, these are the ingredients of somebody's program, whatever. Like, but like it's like cooking. Like you got to figure out how much of that you got to put in.
You're 100% right.
Right,
and you can overdo it as a coach. We both do that all the time. We're like, oh, that was I went too far on that.
And it's not like just because this guy's, you know, because he does this and he measures this, like we're going to put his grip here and make him do this. Like, that's just not how the shit works.
No, it doesn't work that way. And plus, you know, you have the human element too, which is somebody may not be comfortable.
Wait, there's a human in there?
I swear that there should be.
Yeah. Forget.
There should be, right? I mean, that's part of it is like you get somebody who just, looks better and they have more speed, but they feel horrible doing it. That doesn't work. All right, let's do something else. I mean, you got to take that in consideration.
Brady, you're the best. I love our little chats. We got to do this more.
For sure. For sure. We got to play more, Tony.
Well, I tell you what, that day at Pinehurst number one a couple of years ago, that was an all-timer.
That was so funny.
I couldn't move at all. Man, I hooked it more than usual.
You hooked it perfect.
Look, little, you won't. I haven't had beef in a month.
Wow.
And my inflammation's way down. I don't even know why we're putting this on the podcast. They should edit, but like, I'm moving better, Brady. I'm getting ready to hit tighter draws.
I don't know if I'll recognize this PR.
Brady, you're the best. One, I can't thank you enough for just putting up with me over all the years, and you're one of the very best at what you do. You know we're big fans of you and pull for you, and thanks as always for sitting with me.
Hey, back after Tony. Thanks for having me.
I just want to remind everybody something that I forgot. Recently, a couple weeks ago, my wife and I went out. We went to a wedding, and afterwards with some friends, we were like, hey, where's a great place to go? I'll be honest, like, in my travels and day-to-day, sometimes I get caught up and I forget some of the great places right around the corner. But I got to remind you about the Icebox Bar on 755 Monroe Street. I was blown away by just the whole vibe, the atmosphere, and with the Velvet Pig, the food in the back room and the big screen TVs up front. We sat there and watched some playoff games. I was blown away by the atmosphere, the vibe, and just how cool it was to have the Icebox Bar right here near the Dew Sweepers downtown, near where I live. You're looking for a great place to go sit, watch some games, hang out, play some pool. You got to go to the Icebox Bar right there on Monroe Street. There's a good chance you'll see all of us hanging out. But do yourself a favor. Go visit the Icebox. It's one of the best places out there. Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero. And look, recently, several teachers I know and several players have had some scares with skin cancer. In fact, I recently went and saw a dermatologist here in town, and I had a couple things frozen off, eyelid, my face, my earlobe, and not getting any younger. And I know it's getting to that time of the season where it's cooler, but look, being in the sun is a real deal, and I've not been very good, to be totally honest, my whole career at using it at all because I didn't like how greasy it was, how hard it was to get off your hands, how it clogged up my pores. And then I found this sunscreen, Visor Skincare. It's clear. It goes on. It doesn't dry you out. It isn't greasy. It's like you didn't put anything on. By far, it's the best sunscreen I've ever used. Without a doubt, is the easiest to use. And we've got a discount code for all of you. All you have to do is go to visorskincare.com, is use our code word, Dew Sweeper. Visorskincare.com, code word, Dew Sweeper.